Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. We just like to point out that we're both at work today here in the Washington, D.C. area. Most people have the day off, but we're devoted to our listeners. And, Jim, it's also a happy day because the New England Patriots are not going to the Super Bowl. So happy Monday to you.
It is a happy Monday. Maybe not so much in the New England area or the East Coast, considering how we're still digging out. Or Arizona. Actually, you know, it's not a great Monday. Let's go back to bed, Greg.
You know what I miss after having shoveled for 3 days in a row, sometimes multiple times a day? Where are the teenagers looking for money?
You know what jobs Americans won't do?
I guess so.
I don't know about you, Greg. I could use some illegal immigrants around here. Just go look. All right, come on, guys. Under the table. I'll pay you. Start shoveling.
Oh, man. I'm happy for
right
them.
Right now, at this moment, because of that joke, there's somebody saying, aha, National Review supports illegal immigration. Rhino squish. Establishment.
Oh, yes, of course. All right. On to the good martini now. And this may never happen, but if it does, it could be fantastic, assuming the Republicans pick a good nominee. Michael Bloomberg, the multi-billionaire, former three-term mayor of New York City, saying he's not really happy with what he's hearing from the Republican side, not very happy with what he's hearing from the Democratic side, and he's going to decide by March whether or not to mount an independent bid for president, which he says he's willing to commit at least $1 billion towards winning. He's told several people he needs to see a path to victory before he'd do it. Some have said that means if he doesn't think Hillary's going to be the nominee for the Democrats, he's going to do it. Hillary's trying to cozy up with him on the Sunday morning shows. But ultimately, Jim, Michael Bloomberg, known for the nanny state and especially for his gun control agenda, would only help the Republican nominee, you would think.
It would. Now, it's worth noting, in the next couple of weeks, Greg, you're going to see op-eds from a lot of veteran political consultants, both Democrats and Republicans. And they're going to write op-eds that say, Michael Bloomberg should run, Michael Bloomberg could win, and here's a preview of the strategy that could help him win. And the reason you will see this, Greg, is because when political consultants look at Michael Bloomberg, they see a giant pile of money with eyes. In fact, that pile of money is a lot taller than Michael Bloomberg himself. As a result of that, they will do anything. They would love to work on a Michael Bloomberg campaign, whether it's got a chance to win or not. You're going to see all the old Perot guys, you know, sometimes, you know, a billionaire who thinks he can win the presidency and is willing to pay good money to political consultants. People can buy beach homes on that kind of a deal, Greg. That's, you know, so you're going to see a lot of talk about this. Now, here's the thing. You have Bernie Sanders, who's, you know, currently narrowly ahead in Iowa and well ahead in New Hampshire, ends up winning the Democratic nomination. Then all of a sudden you have a avowed socialist running for the Democratic nominee. On the Republican side, you could have Donald Trump, a guy who a lot of people find repugnant, both for ideological reasons or for just, you know, sheer obnoxiousness or personal abrasiveness or things like that. Then you go, well, let's say Trump stumbles and you have Cruz. Well, Cruz is pretty darn conservative. Bloomberg could look at that and say, these are two losers who I can beat because he comes from a business background, because he technically ran as a Republican in 2001. And Greg, we all remember, he ran as a Republican because no one was running on the Republican side. And there were a whole bunch of Democrats running. That's the only reason Michael Bloomberg is a Republican. It was literally the path of least resistance for him when he wanted to be mayor. I'm still seeing some voice saying, oh, that could really hurt Republicans. No, there's nothing remotely conservative about Mike Bloomberg. There's really not much there to appeal to Republicans unless you're like a law and order against trans fats types. he kind of supported school choice. He did a fairly good job in the city of preventing terror attacks when he was there. He wasn't a disaster for a mayor, although it definitely became a city that was either very rich or you were poor in New York City during his time. It definitely would scramble things. It probably is good news for Republicans. I, like you, think in the end he's going to say, it's not worth the expenditure. Why should I take the pay cut and go run for that? Having said that, you know, if you have two billionaires, neither of whom are consistent conservatives, and Bernie Sanders, the socialist, is the third option there. Greg, you think possibility maybe you'd see a fourth option come in there?
It's possible. George Will has been floating the idea that there could be a conservative extra party candidate if Trump is the nominee. I haven't heard anybody else really say that, but who knows? And don't forget, of course, Jim Webb and his independent bid. So
four-way race, five-way race, you know. I mean, here's the thing. Eventually, if it turns into a buffet table, Greg, you and I will find something we like.
You hope so, anyway.
I'm looking at this field, and somebody had said, you know, look at these options of Hillary, Sanders, you know, Donald Trump, and Michael Bloomberg. If I'm a gun owner, can I get one guy who's on my side, please? One guy who's a consistent Second Amendment advocate? But
I think Webb's your guy then, sadly. A couple different thoughts here. First of all, Bloomberg's worth more than three times as much as Trump, so I don't know what that says about winning and losing. But the other thing is that the fascinating political rise of Michael Bloomberg, not only did he have the path of least resistance by pretending to be a Republican when he ran the first two times, but also the fact that he was going to get creamed until 9/11 happened, and then Rudy Giuliani endorsed Michael Bloomberg, and he narrowly beat Mark Green, who would have been a complete disaster as mayor. And at that time, Rudy Giuliani probably could have endorsed Emperor Palpatine, and Emperor Palpatine would have been the next mayor of New York City.
Hey, look, he restored order at a time when we needed it.
All right. Speaking of the dissatisfaction with the current crop of candidates, let's move to the second and bad martini. This is from Paul Sperry over at the New York Post. The FBI is investigating whether members of Hillary Clinton's inner circle cut and pasted material from the government's classified network so that it could be sent to her private email address, former State Department security officials say. Clinton and her top aides had access to a Pentagon-run classified network that goes up to the secret level, as well as a separate system used for top-secret communications. The two systems, the Secret Internet Protocol Router Network and the Joint Worldwide Intelligence Communication System, are not connected to the unclassified system, known as the Non-Classified Internet Protocol Router Network. That's a lot of jargon there, but somehow, highly classified information jumped from those closed systems to the open system and turned up in at least 1,340 of Clinton's home emails, including several the CIA earlier this month flagged as containing ultra-secret, sensitive, compartmented information and special access programs. And then they quote this guy Raymond Fournier from a veteran diplomatic security service special agent saying, quote, "It takes a very conscious effort to move a classified email or cable from the classified systems over to the unsecured open system and then send it to Hillary Clinton's personal email. That's no less than a two-conscious step process. Clinton staff would have simply retyped classified information from the systems or taken screenshots and sent them. Either way, it's totally illegal." Jim, you wrote earlier today in The Jolt that if this turns out to be true, indictments should be handed out like Pez.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you summarized it well in those last couple of words. Extremely, extremely illegal. Even if you're looking at the jargon and you're just looking at, feel like it's the PC load letter message from Office Space. Wondering why, wait, huh? You know, which, by the way, was, judging from those emails, exactly what the mood was in the Hillary Clinton State Department office. This is more evidence she and her staff were doing things they weren't supposed to do. That's blatantly against the law. That cannot be ignored. It cannot be swept under the rug. You cannot say, ah, everybody does it all the time. I'm talking to more and more folks who are, you know, plugged into the world of law enforcement and the handling of national security information. Look, you can't just say, ah, this is no big deal. There's, you know, the question is then what happens? Does the FBI come back and give the DOJ a recommendation of an indictment? Does the DOJ say, eh, we're not going to do this? Does the FBI director resign? There's still a lot of chapters to be written in this part, but the idea of it all walks away with people saying, eh, no big deal, does not appear to be in the cards anymore.
Let's move on to the crazy martini now and back to Donald Trump. He is not only happy with his new poll numbers, a couple of them which now suggest he's back ahead in Iowa with just a week to go before the caucuses, but he's also really happy about the level of commitment from his supporters, which led to this comment over the weekend.
"The people, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible. Will you stay? Absolutely. I think it's 68 or 69%. Will you most likely stay? That gets into the 90s. Other guys are like a 10. A guy like Jeb Bush, he has a nobody, but he's like like they don't have people. They have nothing."
So, Jim, what's crazier here, that Donald Trump would use and go with the example of him shooting someone in Fifth Avenue and keeping his supporters, or the fact that he probably would keep most of his supporters if he did that?
It's funny because it's true.
Right.
I'd really like to see it tested, by the way. Let's see how this shakes out. When you say, oh, my God, what a horrible thing to say, people say, oh, of course, his fan base jumps on you and says, look, you know, oh, it's a joke. What's wrong with you? Why can't you take a joke? You're such humorless scolds. All he's saying, Greg, is that he could run around and shoot people. And he's joking that his fan base is so fanatically loyal to him, they'd be perfectly okay with the shooting spree. Isn't that hilarious? As you pointed out, if Jeb Bush had made the exact same claim, we'd all be like laughing really hard because, you know, as implied that audio you played from Trump, I have a hard time believing Bush fans are fanatically loyal and would be willing to overlook mass murder out of their, you know, devotion to their guy. I mean, basically, Trump is boasting that he's a cult of personality right now. And his whole base is like, it's now become beyond parody because he laughs about it. He jokes about it. The joke is on his supporters, but they all like it. This is a win-win for all of us, I suppose, except for the, you know, he says that he wouldn't lose any supporters if he went shooting at people at Fifth Avenue. I feel like at least there should be some asterisk to that, that there, Greg, because he would technically lose the supporters he shot. At that point, that's a no there. Also, I saw that over the weekend, I was kind of active on Twitter. Went into the Image King. I made a very simple, basic, but I think compelling ad. Ted Cruz, he's the conservative leader who won't go on a shooting spree. You know what everyone said in response to that, Greg, right?
What's that?
Rhino. Only an establishment squish rules out the possibility of a shooting spree on Fifth Avenue. Darn it, Greg, if this country needs more shooting sprees on Fifth Avenue, and Trump is the only guy who is strong enough to do it. In fact, he's the only man. If he had even brought it up, we wouldn't even be talking about the issue of whether or not we should have shooting sprees on Fifth Avenue. So.
He talked about Rubio and Cruz being soft in their for sure support later on, but he went to Jeb first. Do you ever get this vision in your head of 50 years ago, this playing out at some elite East Coast boarding school where Trump is just making life completely miserable for a young Jeb Bush?
It's not hard to envision that scenario shaking out. At some point, I'd like to think that, you know, Morning Jolt, National Review, the Three Martini Lunch, right? If you and I had fanatical followers of this podcast and they said, I enjoy Three Martini Lunch so much that I don't care if Jim and Greg go on a cross-country killing spree, that wouldn't make me feel good. I'd be like, no, actually, the podcast isn't that good, right? It's really not worth overlooking murder for. I'm not insulted if you come to that contrary opinion there. I could do the Godwin's Law joke. You know who else had fanatical supporters there? Let's just put it simpler. You know who also had like really devoted, let's just say David Koresh, okay? At some point, really loyal followers start being a liability. And, you just don't outsource your thinking to somebody. When Trump says that about you, Trump supporter, you should probably be offended by that. But, you know, I know, he can do no wrong in your eyes. You don't care because you're angry. There's nothing more reassuring than seeing lots of Americans who are really angry applauding lines about shooting sprees.
Dear Mr. Garrity.
There we go. Yes, yeah. I'll probably get warning shots to emphasize how I shouldn't be joking about Trump's joking about shooting sprees. What a way to start the week, Greg.
Are you watching?
This is handed to me. I don't know, but schools in the D.C. area are closed until March. I hope you're okay with that. That, you know, there's...
Yes, we're all homebound. We're all snowbound. We all are basically suffering from cabin fever. And I'm certain there's still plenty of things that we could better do with our time tonight than watch the Democratic town hall.
It is kind of weird to have one on a weeknight, though, isn't it?
That's true.
But I was really surprised they didn't schedule it for last night opposite the NFC Championship game.
That would have been more consistent, that's for sure. Yeah. Unreal. Oh, Jim, we did it. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.